Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Practicing basics, consistency in what we're doing.
Guys getting real banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. And for those regular listeners, subscribers who've been waiting for the last piece of what I've been intending to record the last couple episodes, we're talking about a little bit more some of the questions that have come in, talking about some freshman contributors, discussion more about the season coming in rather than recruiting. Well, I'm sorry to say that there's been so much that's happened in recruiting the last couple weeks that I'm going to delay that to one more episode. But that will be out very shortly after this one posts, so no fear, but going to record about a half an hour on some recruiting developments, and so I'll go ahead and get right to that now. So, first things first, Camp Jimbo in July was seems to have been a pretty good success for Florida State, a lot of stuff around it, a number of commits coming out of that camp. Just before the camp, got a commit from Virtus Brown, from IMG, a ranked, I believe, as a second ranked center in the country in the 247 composite or 24/7 composite. I don't really care what he's ranked, quite frankly. I looked at or what position he's ranked at, but I did look at what he's got in terms available on his huddle. And this is a kid that is a really, really good get for Florida State. He's a guy that played mostly tackle, but actually at his last spot, and then he's taken to center really well since he's been at IMG. This is a guy that at the college level should be able to play any of the three interior positions. He's not quite long enough, I don't think, to play tackle, although he does have really good feet. But he's a mauler, and he's a guy that, based on what I see, I think he's going to be more ready to play early in his career than most interior linemen who arrive on campus. I think this is a kid that arrives, and while he may not play right away because there is some experience and there should be some depth on the roster when he arrives, he's a guy that will push to play anyway, and that's something that's a real positive. Anytime you can bring in those guys, that kind of guy, that's a positive that's going to make your football team better. And I think long term, he projects as a starter either at center or guard, or potentially both over the course of his career. And I think projects about as well as anybody Florida State's gotten on the interior certainly in the last 2 years. I think he's on the level of a guy like a Dickerson in terms of how well he projects in what Florida State does. So I think that's a very, very big pickup for Florida State. Hasn't been a whole lot of buzz about it from what I've seen, but I think he's got a chance to be a really, really good player. After that, Marquez Ezard, the wide receiver from Georgia, who people that I trust seem to think that he may be the best wide receiver prospect in the state of Georgia. Not the fastest guy in the world. He's based on the numbers you see online, probably around a 4.7, and that seems about right based on what you see on tape. He's not pulling away from guys. Not one of those. Not a burner. But there's a lot to like about his game, and he, in a lot of respects, fits as that sort of prototypical Jimbo Fisher number two wide receiver that goes all the way back to LSU, and you know, that big body guy that you see on those dig routes and different things in the Jimbo Fisher and what Jimbo Fisher likes to run really fits well with what Florida State does. There are some similarities. Some people have noted some similarities to a guy like Anquan Boldin, which I think, you know, I'm a little bit more cautious about that. Quan had, and still to some degree has, even though he's lost a step as he's gotten older, had unbelievable feet for his size, and that's probably a little bit of an unfair comparison, but I think you're getting a guy that can be that kind of Dwayne Bowe, big body type receiver. Again, that's maybe a little unfair because Bo also ran a little better. But, you know, a Dakota Fagg or somebody like that in the Florida State offense, or maybe a Willie Halstead, not quite as long, but that kind of big prospect on the outside that gives you a sure-handed, very sure-handed player, shows that on tape, and a guy that makes plays. I mean, even though he's not the fastest guy in the world, you do see him making big play after big play, and you know, whether it's going up over top of a guy or making a tough catch in traffic and then pulling away after a broken tackle, makes a lot of plays, and this is the kind of wide receiver you've got to have in this offense, really, to be successful. Also, another comparison that actually might be a pretty good one is he's similar in a lot of respects to Devontae Phillips coming out. Very sure-handed, bigger body, but not quite as fast. And there's definitely always going to be a place for that kind of guy in this offense. So really good pickup for Florida State. You always good to get quality playmakers, proven playmakers, and certainly continuing to get inroads into the state of Georgia, which really is home territory for Florida State in a lot of respects. It's closer to Atlanta. It's about half the distance to Atlanta that it is to Miami. So in that respect, Florida State, sometimes people forget how much that area should be regarded as much as at home for Florida State as it is for, say, the South Florida area or Central Florida area, which in many cases are even more difficult to recruit, despite being from the same state in terms of the name. On top of that, Jonathan Huggins, who had tried to commit to Florida State before, but the coaches told him to hold off for academic reasons. And, you know, usually that's a way of not being clear, not being sure that you necessarily regard the kid as a take, but not wanting to let him know that you're slow playing him. Well, he did the work in the classroom. Apparently had a couple classes to take care of and getting some substitute grades in there, you know, with what you can do with summer school. Did his work, and they came back, and he came back, and they accepted his commitment. I've seen some criticism among those, among folks on social media and so on, who don't think that he's a Florida State level recruit at the safety position. I disagree. I think, first of all, he's one of those guys that was basically the only player of this kind of caliber on his on his team. He's just transferred to mainland, so we'll see. He'll get an opportunity to play a little higher level this year with some teammates that can also play. But the thing that you do see in his huddle footage is a very explosive, very aggressive safety prospect who plays mean. He's got a lot of similarities to a guy like Trey Marshall. Not quite as maybe not quite as much long speed as Marshall had coming out, but a similar kind of burst and explosion and aggression that you see from Trey Marshall. So Huggins might be the guy that Florida State puts out on the field for first halves of a good number of games over the next few years, and or maybe the second half of openers over the next few years. But one of those guys that, again, fits really closely with the kinds of things that they like to do defensively. Another thing that stuck out to me on his tape, and I haven't seen all his measurements, but he appears to be a kid that plays longer than his height. I think he measured in somewhere around 6'1" or 6'5" or whatever. His wingspan is a good bit larger than that. He plays longer. He's a really long kid for his height. And again, that's something that they look for. They like those guys with those really long arms, and he has that. Speaking of really long arms, another guy that just committed as well is ridiculously long, 6'4", about 190-pound safety, another safety prospect, Israel Mukuamu, who those who saw him at the Florida State camp and have seen him elsewhere, again, people I trust, talked about, and I saw some of the footage as well, and I concurred. Obviously, I wasn't there live, though, so I have to rely a little bit on some of that in addition to what I see. There's some people who are saying, listen, this kid is not a 3-star. He is a borderline 5-star kind of prospect in terms of what he brings to the table physically. This kid should be a high 4-star at worst, is what they were texting and so on to me the day or the day after he was at that camp. And it wasn't even clear that he was going to end up at Florida State at that time. They were just blown away by his fluidity and his ability to move at 6'4", 6'5". I've already seen some Pat Watkins comparisons thrown out there. I think he's a good bit more fluid than Pat Watkins was. A little bit more able to match up in one-on-one coverage than Watkins was. Watkins was a great free safety center field type prospect. Mukuamo is a kid that can actually play corner at 6'4". There are not many guys who are almost 6'5 that can turn and run like that. Now, he's not going to play corner at Florida State, but he does give you a safety that you can feel comfortable with if he does wind up getting matched up in coverage here and there rather than just playing center field. And with that length and his ability to add some size through that frame, really, really exciting prospect to get there as well. Another commitment from the camp was Chaz Neal, a guy who was last year at Armwood. So some feel that, you know, maybe the Armwood curse has been broken, but no, he's transferring away from Armwood, so that's irrelevant. This is, again, another big, big body kid, about 6'6", 6'7". And quite frankly, I'll be a little bit blunt. I don't know that this is a kid that winds up in the class. Sometimes you offer a kid not necessarily expecting him to end up in the class. And even if you take his commitment, ultimately he may not wind up, you know that he may not wind up in that class. And I suspect that this is one of those situations where, you know, you got a kid who, for a number of reasons in terms of frame and relationships and others, you think maybe it's a good idea to offer at this stage, but you can always, you know, go different directions later in the process. And that's kind of what I think might happen here. Some people think he may end up at tackle. Not so sure about that, but this is a guy that, you know, if he does stick in the class, you're looking at a really big-bodied, strong side end, or somebody that winds up moving to tackle, but a really raw prospect. Not a whole lot of burst from what I saw, and frankly, the people that I talked to at Camp Jimbo who watched him go through defensive end drills and offensive line drills weren't all that impressed and were surprised that he got a commitment, though, again, there was some speculation as to why that was. Now, that basically, I think, brings us up to date in terms of current commitments that since the last podcast episode, but there are a number of other prospects to discuss. And again, because this is recruiting, not everybody's always excited about that. I'm going to try to keep this shorter, but a few things to discuss. Another guy that may end up coming on board in terms of defensive end is a kid from North Carolina named Andrew Tuizama. Another guy who is more of a project type, but I think a better athlete than Chaz Neal. He's 6'6", like 230, and his tape in high school shows him lined up wide at out wide at wide receiver, and showing good fluidity and the ability to catch the football and adjust and make moves in traffic and all that. That kind of guy you can start to, you know, envision maybe you're early on that kid being a developmental guy that you can do some stuff with. Wouldn't be surprised if he wound up in the class as one of those strong side end type bodies that you build up, but you don't expect to contribute right away. But, you know, similar type of thing with the Hall kid who wound up going to Alabama a couple years ago at defensive end outside. They're playing him at Jack, that outside linebacker position. He also is one of those guys that, you know, at 6'4", 6'5", or whatever he was playing wide receiver on one side and defensive line on the other. And those kids are kids you give an extra look to because of that fluidity and the ability to add some weight to that frame. Another kid that, you know, I thought coming into camp may wind up leaving with a chance to earn an offer was Sam Pinckney, the wide receiver from South Carolina. I still think he's way underrated, but the footage that I saw from the camp, as soon as I saw him going through the wide receiver drills that they get these guys going through as a part of the evaluation process in camp, I immediately was, I'm not sure he's a take. Not for Florida State, not this cycle. He might be in a lot of other years, but really, he looked to me he's one of those puppies that his feet just are a little big yet for where he's at that position. It's a little more raw than some of the other guys they're on, and it's going to take him longer to be ready relative to some of the others. Just a little heavy-footed, little stiffer in the hips than a couple of the other guys that they had, and it kind of did him a disservice going through the drills next to or right after or before Warren Thompson, who the wide receiver from Armwood, who is currently committed to Oregon, who prior to this camp, I actually had Pinckney ahead of Thompson because I felt like I saw more top-end speed down the field from Pinckney on their huddle stuff. But after seeing them side by side, I don't think there's any question that Thompson should be ahead of him. And it's one of those things where the fluidity, the ability to get his hips down and to change direction and all that is just a lot more polished and a lot more impressive at this stage from Warren Thompson than it is from a kid like Pinckney, who, again, I think this is going to be a really good player. I think he's way underrated, but like I said, I think he's raw. I think it's going to take him a little longer to be ready compared to some of the other receivers in what is a very strong wide receiver cycle. And I just don't ultimately think he's going to be a take for Florida State. I wouldn't be surprised to see him end up at one of those SEC programs, maybe a South Carolina. Obviously, that's a home state school for him, or an LSU or somebody like that, where you know he can be a big bodied wide receiver. And I think in 3-4 years we'll start hearing his name as a guy that ends up being perhaps a go to wide receiver for one of those types of programs. But I don't think he's a take for Florida State. Beyond that, there are a few others. Jalen Waddle visited the camp, spent most of the camp on the golf cart with Jimbo Fisher, from what I understand. Another guy that, extremely good burst, more of a slot type prospect, return guy, but very talented. And then just Sean Jones, a kid from Tampa. The stuff I saw from him looked really, really good. Again, people who were there and watched the whole camp said he was really dominant going up against the defensive backs there, and he earned himself an offer. He may not wind up in the class by his choice or whatever, but you know I think he's worth a legitimate offer, and it'll be interesting to see if you know he comes on board, what happens between him and say DeMarcus Adams, who had a similar type of performance at the first Jimbo Fisher camp session, what they do with that. But Jones, you know, he's a very fluid kid and moves a lot better. I was surprised when I found out he was a good bit over 6'1". He's a guy that there's a lot of Nooney Murray type movement in what he looks like. And, doing that at 6'1" plus, very impressive, and the kind of kid that, again, you go back and you look at the tape, and you know he validates that. He makes a lot of plays on the tape, and you know is the kind of wide receiver that has had a lot of success at Florida State. Your Rashad Green type, but again, a bigger body, a little more length and height than Green or Nooney Murray at this stage. So again, another real positive there. And it's funny because just what 2-3 weeks ago, I was telling people who were really upset about the state of Florida State recruiting in terms of the wide receiver position. Guys, this is all going to sound so silly before too long. And sure enough, right now, the question is, how are they going to fit all the wide receivers who may want in? And I'm talking about quality wide receivers. These are not guys that don't belong. I mean, as I've said before, I think Antoine Green, the kid that they got committed a few weeks back, I think he's criminally underrated at this stage. And is a guy that really should be a mid to high 4-star player. And that, you know, he's not, I think, even going to end up being the top wide receiver recruit in the class necessarily. So I think it's also going to be interesting to see what happens with Tommy Bush, the wide receiver from Texas, particularly if Florida State lends Justin Fields, the quarterback, who we'll, you know, discuss in a couple minutes. But I think Bush is a guy that may want in. You know, if Waddle wants in, suddenly you've got a really good class at wide receiver that has a range of different types of players that fit well in the offense. So, you know, there's just no reason to panic at this stage. And, you know, all of the discussion about, oh, you know, you need to, you know, move on to another wide receiver coach so you can start recruiting well at the position or whatever. Let's slow the truck down and, you know, let's take a look at who actually winds up in the class. And I think it's going to end up being a pretty good class. And particularly if Justin Fields comes in, that's going to probably attract another one or two top type guys that want in. And then you have the difficult problem, but the good problem of figuring out which guys you end up keeping. Another guy that showed up at the camp, Channing Tindall. I'm just going to say this guy couldn't fit the Florida State scheme as a linebacker better. Basically, he is a Telvin Smith type linebacker with more bulk. So that's one of those, yes, please. If he wants to sign, you do whatever you can to get him. And he's a kid that actually came down and worked out because he really wanted an offer, even though he's already ranked as one of the top linebackers in the country. He wanted to earn it. Well, they met him with an offer, basically. Once he showed interest, the interest to actually come to town, it was like, all right, we want you. Well, we'll see if they end up getting him. But you're talking about a kid that could be a day one contributor at linebacker. I think he's that impressive. A couple others worth talking about. William Barnes, I keep seeing discussed, the offensive tackle from Apopka. A lot of people look at him as one of the keys to this class. I'm just going to warn people. I've had some interaction with some people close to the William Barnes recruitment and close to the kid. And yes, you know, he's been in Tallahassee a number of times. He's, you know, there's reason to think Florida State has a chance, but I very much doubt he winds up at Florida State. I still think he winds up either in Chapel Hill or in Gainesville. And I think in this cycle, Florida State probably winds up an offensive tackle short of exactly what they want. The good thing is that there are solutions on the roster that are fine for the next 2-3 years. They'll just need to land at least two good offensive tackle prospects in the 2019 class, which looks like that's going to be very doable. So again, I don't expect Barnes to end up in Tallahassee. I won't believe that until the pen hits the paper, frankly. Beyond that, Justin Fields. Everybody wants to talk about Fields. I've already given my 2 cents on that largely in a couple podcasts ago. I think the big development is how Georgia managed to jump in really high into that discussion, despite having landed the 2 5-star quarterbacks from the last couple of years, really selling the kid on being the hometown hero and so on. Also got a lot of behind the scenes interaction about how Georgia, you know, it's one of those situations where you can never count out the very well established hometown university, even though, you know, obviously he's not from Athens, but the home state or the flagship school from a kid's state, you never count those programs out. They have a very long reach and a lot of ways to make sure that they get your attention. So, you know, Georgia stepped back into it. I still think Florida State lands the kid. There's a lot of confidence in Tallahassee. When you see that kind of confidence about a quarterback, they rarely miss. And I think here's the kicker. I thought this before I saw an interview, which posted, I believe, yesterday. I'm recording this on Tuesday, the 26th. There's an interview with Fields that posted that was asking him about his decision-making process and so on. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion that he may commit before the season, which I don't think necessarily is going to happen. But he made a comment about wanting to see, you know, his final decision would depend to some degree on seeing how these teams looked early in the season, which to me spoke quite a bit. That said a lot. And one of the things that I just keep coming back to is how important this opener against Alabama is for Florida State, not just for 2017, but for the future. Because I'm becoming increasingly convinced, and it's rare that this is the case. Normally, on-field results have limited benefit for a program, with some exceptions. But this is a big exception. I think if Florida State is able to go out there and look really good against Alabama and perhaps win that game, if Florida State goes out and wins against Alabama, and particularly if DeAndre Francois looks good in the process, I think Florida State gets Justin Fields. I think that cements it. And not only that, I think that probably ends up bringing a few more guys into the class. And suddenly you've, in one game, managed to tilt the balance a little bit, not just in terms of one season, but nationally moving forward, tip the balance a little bit towards your own program by winning that opener. Now, obviously, you know, stuff can change over the course of a year, and, you know, what happens, and let's say those two teams play again and the result gets reversed in the playoff, that could matter. But with how this is all shaking out, with early decisions being made and all of that, and once, you know, he makes that decision, I don't think he's going to go back on it wherever he decides to commit next. That opener ends up being really important, and that's going to be really interesting to see, I think, what dominoes end up falling as a result of how those teams, not just Florida State in that opener, but a couple others, Clemson in their opener, Auburn in their opener against Clemson, and so on. What happens here? I think there's a few players that are looking sort of to see where the balance of power is going to fall, and they're interested in winding up there, wherever that is. So just in case you were tempted to maybe think that the Alabama-Florida State game had relatively low stakes, well, as it turns out, I think not only does it have every bit the kind of high stakes that people expect or that people are anticipating and building it up to at the beginning of the year, in terms of Florida State's recruiting momentum and program momentum moving forward, this is very much a pivotal game, and I think the coaching staff knows that. They're very much treating this as one of those games that can further elevate the program and perhaps signal a little bit of a change in the balance of power, and that is precisely what they're aiming for here. Now, the hard part is putting all of that effort and all of that emphasis into that game as a coaching staff, and making sure that your team is prepared and can go in and win that game without sacrificing another game or multiple games as a result. What happens if you do lose that game? What happens if you do win that game? What happens there? You still have to prepare for the season as a whole. So this is a difficult balance. It's a tough balance to strike for a coaching staff. But you know, you put as much as you can into that in the preseason and in camp, and you hope you go in and perform. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they treat it, and it'll be every bit as interesting to see how they manage to recover either from the win or the loss to move into the Miami game in week three. And, you know, you have your second biggest rival, or arguably your biggest rival, your biggest in-conference rival, in week three, immediately or nearly immediately following that massive opener. So again, lots to talk about. I will finally address some of those other things that I've been holding off on in the episode that will release tomorrow. I'm going to go ahead and actually record that here at the same time, just shortly after this, but I don't like the podcast episodes to run too long, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap here. And go ahead and check back in. Those of you who are subscribers, it'll obviously be delivered to you through your podcast manager of choice. But go ahead and check back for the update on the next podcast here in the next day after you get this one. So given that, we'll go ahead and wrap here. This, once again, has been the Unconquered Podcast on the Seminole Sports Radio Network. I'm Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.